This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Welcome back in. Hour number four of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning, reacting to a big 41-38 win for the Titans. They lock up the AFC South for the first time since 2008. They'll be hosting a playoff game this Sunday at Nissan Stadium at noon against the Baltimore Ravens. What a win it was yesterday for the Titans, and we're taking your reaction all day long here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And I'm looking up on the screen right now, Jamal Lewis joining Darren Donick and Chase at 1 o'clock today. So obviously a legendary running back there. Looking forward to that conversation with Jamal Lewis, so make sure you're tuning in to Darren Donick and Chase today at 1 o'clock. Joe Rexroad, yesterday, I think obviously we've talked about Derrick Henry, and he's going to get a lot of credit today, not only for the game he had yesterday, but for the season he had as a whole. But I look at the game, and Ryan Tannehill, to me, in the last couple of drives, I think really proved something to me, and that is we've heard the narrative out there nationally. We've heard it even from some here locally on our text line about his inability to come up with key plays in big moments, to win games, make winning plays when it matters the most. I thought he did that yesterday. I mean, the drive before the field goal where the Titans have to go all the way down the field, big play after big play, whether it was through the air, on the ground. Tannehill was a weapon yesterday in the running game as well with two touchdowns on the ground. But to me, Joe, what really solidified it, that ball that he threw to A.J. Brown to set up the game-winning field goal by Sloman, you could not have thrown a better ball in that situation. And I realize Houston, they got burned defensively there. A.J. Brown ran a great route. But that ball was absolutely perfect. It traveled 54 yards in the air, according to NextGen Stats on Twitter. I mean, it was just a beautiful pass. And to me, that was the type of winning play that is just, you're going to have at times in the playoffs if your quarterback's going to lead you to a Super Bowl appearance. And I thought Tannehill was outstanding yesterday. Corey Curtis from News 2 called that play maybe the most clutch play that he's seen in his time covering the Titans over the last 20 years. It was a beautiful throw by Tannehill, and I think that should shut up a lot of the haters about maybe Tannehill not being able to get it done in the big moments. That was a massive play and a great throw.
Yeah, it was stunning, and it wasn't play action. You know, it wasn't it was just, you know, you're dropping back and you let it fly, and it was perfect. I mean, just go this year. So let's go through the schedule. Denver winning drive, Jacksonville winning drive, Minnesota winning drive. They blow out Buffalo. Houston winning drive. Now, of course, that was largely a swing pass to Derrick Henry that he goes nuts on. And obviously, Henry had the 94-yarder too, but Tannehill still makes big plays in there. Pittsburgh drives him down the field. Has him in position to at least go to overtime, almost has wins the game outright. I mean, it clutch after clutch after clutch early this year in that 5-0 start for Tannehill. And in a lot of cases, when you're in those obvious passing situations late in some of those games, Derrick Henry's on the sideline, you know. Obviously, Tannehill didn't play well in the Cincinnati game, and, you know, they lost that game. But he also, you look at some of these other wins that they've had, he had to have big-time moments against Baltimore late in that game. So, I mean, he's had plenty of games this year where he's demonstrated it. He did it last year too, and then obviously yesterday, that's his moment. I would be interested in that one too. Single play.
Yeah.
You know, because although I think that game had the top line, headline of that game has to still be like Henry rushes for 250 to get past 2,000 to lead the Titans to the division title. Single plays, Corey, that made me think about that when Corey said that earlier. You know, what else jumps out at you in terms of just like one play? And obviously we know the one from 21 years ago, you know, that will always probably be number one, but that's an interesting one. You know, one play that's just stunning and win, you know, basically wins you a game. You know, what else comes to mind?
That's a great point. And how about the call in that situation? Like, you've got less than 20 seconds in the game. You know, if you get pressure there and Tannehill gets sacked or maybe he fumbles the ball in that play, I mean, you're going to lose. You're going to lose that game. So you see a lot of teams, they just fold it up. They'll take their chances in overtime. But the call by the Titans coaching staff to recognize, I think, the situation that they're in with their defense and know that this offense is clicking, it's playing really well, they have full trust in their quarterback to get it done, just a brilliant call by Arthur Smith and the Titans coaching staff. And Tannehill was asked about that after the game. Here's what Ryan Tannehill had to say.
You know, as the kickoff team was lining up, you know, what was the plan? I said, are we going? Are we taking overtime? He said, we're going. So that point was just get ready to go. We didn't know what call was coming in or what the defense was going to look like. But call came in, liked the call, and then got a good look for it from the defense. So, dropped back, put it up, and AJ made a big play for us. And then obviously, you mentioned the kick. I saw it hit off the post, and my stomach sank. Then I saw it drop down, and I think it might have went in. And, sure enough, you know, refs put their hands up, and it was in.
So that was Tannehill after the game yesterday. And, Joe, like, I immediately thought back after I heard that clip to the first time that the Titans matched up against Houston this year in the overtime and the coin toss. And you could see it. Like, when the Titans won the coin toss, Deshaun Watson was just, like, throwing his hands up. He threw his head back because he knew, based on that game, like, neither defense was stopping each other. And if you're the Titans, like, I think you have to be real with yourself at some point and know that this is a heck of a thing to leave up to a coin toss going into a division potentially clinching game in overtime. They go for the kill shot. They get it. Great throw by Tannehill. Great route by A.J. Brown. And that's just the situation this team is in. You got to be, I think, a little bit more aggressive. We talked about that last week and how maybe that affects your play calling. I think this is a perfect example of that affecting your play calling. More of an aggressive tone and just confidence displayed in the Titans offense.
Yeah, it's confidence in the offense, and it's the opposite in the defense, and that's what that call was, and that's what the 4th-and-11 call was. You know, what's your best chance of winning? What's your best chance of having success? It's your offense, probably, even in very remote opportunities for success, it's still a higher chance of success than defense in a favorable position. I mean, that's just the reality of this team right now. So that's how I look at both of those calls. And, hey, when you have a quarterback who can make a throw like that and a receiver who is hurt, and clearly he's hurt every week, and he has to come off the field at some point when someone tackles him low because he has a bum ankle and can still run and make a play like that after the previous drive of, you know, what, three or four catches on that, I think three catches on that 19 play drive in which, you know, he is bullying people to fight for more yards, even with that ankle banged up on those short passes. I mean, that's just – it's big-time clutch players. Tannehill and Henry are the stars and the legends of this year, but A.J. Brown is whatever you want to call him, number one receiver, elite, second tier, first tier, you know, whatever. He is very, very good. He is a big-time player.
He is, in a monster game from him yesterday. 10 catches, 151 yards, and you talk about the 52-yard catch to set up the game-winning field goal. This is coming from our man – Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Titans A.J. Brown hit a max speed of 20.7 miles per hour on his 52-yard reception to set up the game-winning field goal against the Texans. So you're right. I mean, it's very obvious, I think, to watch him out there, especially when he takes a hit low, that the ankle is bothering him, and that happened again yesterday to begin the game. But A.J. Brown still able to gut through it, still able to be productive, and 20.7 miles an hour on that route, even with a bum ankle going out there and playing, that's pretty impressive for number 11.
Yeah, and again, he's a guy who you wondered, like, is he ever going to be like the vertical threat? He's good after the catch, and he's, you know, strong and all that, and he can high point the ball, but is he really a guy you can stretch the field with? Well, yeah, he is. Now, he's still most lethal on those those quick stick routes where he can just get a little bit of space and muscle people and then get into the open field. But it's nice to be able to just send him and just go and know that he can beat a corner. Of course, it helps also when a safety's nowhere near. the play.
Yeah, that certainly helps. There's no question about that. And A.J. Brown becomes the 11th wide receiver in NFL history to start his career with back-to-back 1,000-yard campaigns. So obviously a really good start to his career for A.J. Brown. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brian in Portland texts in and says, I think Corey Davis was way more disappointing than our defense yesterday. He had multiple chances to hit his 1,000-yard mark, and to come up short of that the way he did is very, very disappointing. Not a great game from Corey Davis yesterday. He did have some big catches towards the end, but falls just short of the 1,000-yard mark, finishes the season with 984 yards receiving. Had a few drops yesterday that is not typical with Corey Davis, but certainly a few passes he would like to have back.
Yeah, that's tough to be deemed more disappointing than a defense that let your opponent.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far.
But then again, I guess it's relative to expectations too. I mean, this is kind of what we expect from the defense, and Davis has been so great this year, has caught everything. I will say this though, that 3rd and 8, and he catches one and bowls his way to get 9 with 2 defenders in the area. I think that largely made up for some of the misplays, because that was, at that moment, the most important offensive play of the game for the Titans. So don't forget that.
And it was, I mean, it was obvious yesterday when they were throwing the ball where they were going with it. A.J. Brown, 11 targets. Corey Davis, 11 targets yesterday. Everybody else in the Titans offense combined for 5 targets yesterday. Ferkser had 2. Jonnu Smith had 2. Nick Westbrook had 1. So not a whole lot of involvement from receivers outside of A.J. Brown and Corey Davis yesterday. Obviously, Derrick Henry getting the ball 34 times on the ground. You're not throwing the ball a ton in that game. Tannehill only threw 27 passes yesterday, but it was pretty obvious in passing situations that ball was going to end up in the hands of either Corey Davis or A.J. Brown. And just based on the way the offense has had to adapt, and you talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, Jonnu Smith at this point has essentially been taken out of the offense from a receiving standpoint, just based on what the Titans had to do from a protection standpoint. I mean, they struggled against Green Bay. They couldn't protect Ryan Tannehill very well at all. I think you'll continue to see, heading into the playoffs and another good defense in Baltimore coming into town, Jonnu Smith, unfortunately for him, has largely been taken out of the passing offense. I think not very much a fault of his own. It's just the way that the Titans have had to do things.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it'll be price control for him, but the reality of him is that I think he has a very different-looking season if Taylor Lewan never goes down. You also think about, like, what would this offense be? You know, because obviously in some ways it has progressed and improved, even with all the injuries on the offensive line. I mean, early in the year, what really stood out in some stretches for this offense was Tannehill standing in long developing routes, and he was comfortable just standing in that pocket and having no issues. And that's different now. And they're still doing this. They're still the only offense since the NFL went to a 16 game schedule to have 3,500 passing, 2,500 rushing, and 25 or fewer sacks. But Jonnu Smith, certainly a guy who has lost out here. And yeah, I agree. It probably is going to continue. I will say that if they can get Humphreys, and we said it this week too, but get Humphreys for this game, that would be significant to have another option who can give you some big catches along with those two guys on the outside.
So did the Titans defense show us anything at all to be excited about yesterday heading into the playoffs in their first round matchup against the Ravens? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Mike, just how you drew it up there to end up with a finish like that to win the division title for the first time in 12 years?
You know, just really proud of our guys, the way they fight, and, you know, a lot of credit to the Texans. You know, at the end of the day, we had some timeouts and felt like, you know, left told Ryan, hey, at the end of the day, just maybe launch one up to AJ, and got a favorable look, and that's what happens, man. Guys go out and make plays in this league, and that's why you win.
The Titans certainly made some plays yesterday. They made just enough to win the division for the first time since 2008. They win 41-38 on the road against the Houston Texans. And Joe, you look at the box score, and it's not going to inspire you defensively if you're the Titans, giving up 38 points to the Texans, especially in the second half. Like, Houston and Deshaun Watson was able to do pretty much whatever they wanted to do out there. Watson finishes 28 of 39 for 365, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception in the game. Brandon Cooks targeted 16 times in this game. He finishes with 11 catches for 166 yards and two touchdowns. So it sounds like more of the same for the Titans defense, and largely it was more of the same. But the difference is four sacks yesterday for the Titans, which is just a monster number based on this defense and what it's done all season long. You go from 15 sacks to 19 sacks on the season. So with the outbreak in sacks yesterday, Joe, do you feel any differently at all about this Titans defense heading into the playoffs?
No, it's bad. But before we complain more about the D, I would also like to complain about special teams for a moment. How do you, as the Titans, knowing you're playing a 4-11 team, knowing they're going to have some tricks up their sleeve, and then you have a quarterback line up at personal protector, how do you let that fake happen?
That's a great question.
Like, that was a terrible special teams moment from the Titans. Like, you absolutely – like, look, I understand that, like, hey, sometimes a team has a great fake, and even if you're ready, you know, if you're wary of it, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to stop it. But, like, when they give you the tell of A.J. McCarron at personal protector, there you go. I mean, you know, they are faking. That's bad. That's bad.
And A.J. McCarron is sneaky, baby. You got to watch out where he is at all times.
Yes, that's right. That's right. He's crafty. But, I mean, that's been obviously the special teams wins the game because Sam Sloman doinks it in. But now that's another thing that has to be better for the Titans overall is the special teams. But the defense, I mean, look, I think some of the blitzing was effective, and that's really what it's going to take. It's for one thing, like, we don't – I mean, there's one game the Titans have to win here, and it's a different matchup anyway, right? So it's just hard to even take that game to this game or really any of those games against good quarterbacks because it's so much more about being physical and setting the edge and run fits and all this stuff and doing what they've done really well in two games against Lamar Jackson the last year. But as far as, like, beyond that, if they were to win and then they go play, I mean, they'd probably go play Kansas City next. Yay. I think it's good for them that they found a way to get Deshaun Watson to the ground four times. I mean, Jack Crawford, that was a heck of a move.
That was a heck of a sack.
I will say, like, his move, and he's been solid this year, but he hasn't done a lot of stuff like that. And I was like, wow, where's that been? Landry, good to see him get rewarded because, again, he's out there trying and he's pretty good. But it's going to take – I mean, they sent defensive backs a lot yesterday. They sent King. They sent Adoree. They sent Butler. And of course, they blitzed David Long a lot too. And they blitzed a lot. And I think that's going to be what we see. And then you have to try to hold up. And, you know, of course, if you get to a point where you're playing like a Mahomes, I mean, it's just, you know, it's – I don't know what you do. You score every time you get the ball.
You know, we talked about Adoree last week and obviously the struggles he had against Green Bay, both in coverage and in tackling. I mean, at times it looked rough out there with Adoree. What did you think of his response yesterday against Houston? What did you make of his play? Finished the day with four tackles.
I mean, I thought he had some good moments, some good situations where there, and man, he provided good coverage. That last Houston drive where they end up getting three straight incompletions from the 33, but to get to the 33, you know, he absolutely did not get the depth, and you can't give up that kind of a play right there, but they did. So, I thought he had – obviously, you're probably going to look better the next week when you're not matched up with the Davante Adams. So I would call that a step. And I think it's – look, you got to be realistic about someone who hasn't played all year and who obviously had a knee injury serious enough to not play all year and a setback or whatever all happened with Adoree Jackson. You got to maybe expect for some time. But, I mean, here it is. You know, it's time for him to perform. And obviously, like with the corners, this matchup, getting off blocks and making tackles, huge part of this game. You know, Malcolm Butler, really good at that. All those guys are going to have to be good at it. And then those safeties, of course, are going to have to not let the ball go over their heads because the Ravens love to do that.
Yeah, and it was another situation yesterday where this goes unnoticed when you look at it, but the final score ends up being 41-38, and the Titans had a pretty big lead at one point. So, obviously, the Texans throwing the ball a lot. But you look at David Johnson, 14 carries, 84 yards, 6 yards a pop on the ground. That's a problem. I mean, A.J. Dillon just ran all over him. David Johnson ran all over him in limited opportunities yesterday. He had a 26-yarder as his long. And you mentioned it with the Ravens. They've gotten back to what their identity is, and that is running the football. So, you know, it's a different matchup. And I think, honestly, when you look at what it could have been against the Bills, this matchup heading into this game Sunday for the Titans against the Ravens, probably feel better about it just based on the style of play that Baltimore has. But if you can't stop the run, the Ravens are going to be able to do whatever they want. So this is a huge point of emphasis if I'm the Titans this week, is you got to find a way to limit how effective they can be in the running game. And the last couple of weeks, after you thought they were making some progress in that area, they've struggled defending against the run.
Yeah, and look, again, they've done a good job relative to what Baltimore usually does. So I think it is sometimes easier when you can focus on it. And there aren't that many teams in the league that you're focusing on. We got to stop the run. Now, of course, they focused on it with the Browns, and then Baker Mayfield just torches them all over the place in that game. But it's a different kind of offense. I mean, you look at the Ravens yesterday, and I understand it's the Bengals playing out the string. But Dobbins, 13 for 160. Lamar, 11 for 97. Gus Edwards, 12 for 60. Hey, throw in a little Mark Ingram, 9 for 39, just for good measure. You know, I mean, he's their fourth most effective runner, and he's still not bad. So it's they bring a lot to you, and you've got to be very physical. And, you know, a guy who I would call little, you know, I don't know about key, but an important development is Tyr Tart is put on the COVID reserve list yesterday.
Yep.
And again, we don't know right now, positive or close contact. If it's close contact, he could play. But that's a guy who, in a game like this, as much interior strength and disruption and bulk as you can have, you know, the better.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at it from a pass rush standpoint, I think there are games where you're really concerned about that. Obviously, like a Green Bay matchup, that stands out. Like, if you can't touch Aaron Rodgers, you're going to be in trouble in that game. And I'm not saying that that's not going to be the case if you're Lamar Jackson, but I think the strategy in this game, if you're the Titans, is more about containment than it is bringing him to the ground. Now, having said that, one of the biggest plays of the game in the first matchup for the Ravens against the Titans was Harold Landry getting him to the ground late in the game. I mean, you're able to put pressure on him and bring him to the ground. But to me, this matchup is less about like really getting in his face and affecting him rather than it is making sure he doesn't just absolutely kill you in the running game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with obviously with pressuring him is when he breaks to the outside, breaks containment.
Right.
Now you're in trouble, you know. So it's like a controlled pass rush that you want, which is hilarious to even talk about that with the Titans, because like any kind of thing that would be called pass rush would be good. Now, but like you said, over time they blitzed and Landry got him, and that was huge. And they got the ball and then, you know, come down and win the game on the Derrick Henry touchdown run. So, I mean, hey, if you can sack him. It's just you got to rush him a little bit more just judiciously than other quarterbacks. And, of course, you're going to spy him. And, you know, that's great. You can spy him, but you better be spying him with someone who's fast. You know, I mean, it's just a big deal to keep him in that bubble between the tackle boxes versus letting him out. And, again, the Titans have really done an excellent job of that in two games. And then, I mean, he's not a guy who's going to dink you to death. He is a guy who can put a 60-yarder on you if you fall asleep and if you start creeping up too much against the run game.
Yeah, and you mentioned a guy that I think is going to be huge in this game, and that is David Long. Leads the team in tackles yesterday with 8, 3 of them solo, and he's had some moments, like even in the Green Bay game, where pretty much nothing went right defensively for the Titans. David Long had some moments in that game where you're like, wow, okay. He's popping around, flying around pretty good out there. I think he, in this matchup against the Ravens, he is going to be crucial to containing Lamar Jackson, containing that offense, and what they're able to do on the ground. I've been pretty impressed by what I've seen out of David Long the last couple weeks.
No, me too. No question. I mean, he is playing hard, and he has a knack for making plays. He has instincts. You know, you can see that he has instincts. And again, he was, I thought, one of the stories of the game. A lot of things going on in that game, you know, Derrick Henry, monster game, and Cleef Raymond with the bomb, and all these things going on. But David Long, I thought, was one of the stories of that game, having to come in a pinch for Jayon Brown and playing the way he did. So he's got to play like that again, too. Another guy, Kamale Correa, was great last year in this matchup. I mean, he was never a great pass rusher, but in this matchup against that offense, he was really good and really solid, setting the edge and just, you know, you can. It's so much assignment football, and it's one of those things where if everyone knows their assignment, executes it, then you can handle it. And they, but Correa really made some big plays. So, who of those, you know, this rotating revolving door of outside linebackers that they have right now next to Landry, who of those guys has the best chance of you know being that guy? I mean, maybe a Wyatt Ray, you know, just because of his physicality. You know, I'm not sure about that, but that's another big thing. I mean, the whole front seven, it just there's a lot of pressure on them. And even though the Ravens have played bad teams lately, there's still something to be said for confidence and, you know, executing and having that timing and rhythm and everything, and they've got it right now.
Ryan Porth, you have some news to pass along.
A little bit. So Jacksonville earlier this morning fired Doug Marrone, head coach, so that was no surprise. There are now five vacancies in the NFL. One of those vacancies is the Detroit Lions, and NFL Network's Ian Rappaport is reporting that Arthur Smith will be one of four, at least four interview participants with the Detroit Lions.
So
coming up in the next couple weeks.
That's big news for Titans fans, obviously. Joe, I don't think a huge surprise there that Arthur Smith is going to be getting some looks based on the way this offense has just continued to annihilate people all season long.
No, not at all. No, he should. And, you know, Charles Robinson maybe end up right. I mean, I think, you know, the idea that like the Bears, the Broncos, if those aren't opening, you just have fewer opportunities. You have a lot of other good candidates for these jobs. And a lot of this will come down to the interviews, but he should absolutely be getting opportunities. And I could see Arthur Smith knocking an interview out of the park and getting an opportunity. I mean, hey, Wink Martindale, you know, the Ravens DC is another guy who will be in that mix with other people. So there's a lot of possibilities, but Arthur Smith, I mean, if I'm a team with an opening right now, he's on my list to talk to for sure.
So let's get your reaction to the matchup coming up on Sunday between the Titans and the Ravens. What excites you the most about this matchup? If you're a Titans fan, what concerns you the most? Let's get your reaction. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a big Titans win yesterday, 41-38 against the Houston Texans. They wrap up the division for the first time since 2008 and will host the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. So lots to get to this week, looking ahead to that matchup. But one thing we've tossed out there after Sam Sloman's heroic field goal yesterday for the Titans to propel them to the division title, what will go down as the more memorable Titans field goal in team history? A bonus poll question today at 1025 The Game on Twitter. The options are Sloman's doink from yesterday that sends the Titans to their first AFC South title in 12 years. Gary Anderson with the win at Baltimore in the playoffs back in the early 2000s, or the Joe Nedney flop slash game-winning field goal versus Pittsburgh. So far, Sam Sloman leading the way early, 52% of the vote going with Sloman, 29% going with the Joe Nedney flop that still has Pittsburgh Steelers fans irate to this day, and then just 19% going with Gary Anderson against Baltimore in the playoffs. No respect whatsoever for Gary Anderson in this poll. Our poll questionnaire, he's just gone at this point. I thought the poll police would come
button.
In strong.
He
is this the first one of the week? Good God.
Joe.
Okay, so here's a new one. Now, listen now. Here's a new one. So I had the mute button. I said something as I was moving the cursor, and then like the message that said "you are muted" was covering the mute button, and I'm like, okay, so now I have to wait for it to go away to click this.
Well, you've made a lot of strides technologically speaking in the past few weeks, so we'll accept one per show. I'm surprised it took you this long.
Yeah, I know it sounds like a flimsy excuse, but yeah, I mean, I've put out my own poll on Twitter, so give me a break.
All I'm hearing are excuses right now, Joe. It's literally all I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's
fine. I mean, you have no excuse for dissing Ryan Tannehill the way you did in your poll today. So, I mean, we all have our things.
Are we surprised that Uncle Gary is not getting more respect in this poll? Just 19% of the vote.
A little bit.
It's a playoff game.
A little bit. Yeah,
yeah. Playoff win, man.
Against the Ravens.
First of all, I think a lot of these polls, if there's something big happened that just happened, that's going to win, right? Younger people, maybe they don't remember some of that stuff. That's another thing. You know, sometimes then people will get on there and talk like recency bias, like on the poll about the best season. I saw some of that today. You know, recency bias, you know, but some people automatically go to that too. And it's like, yeah, but maybe this is the best, man. Like sometimes the thing that just happened actually is the best. Like, and yeah, there's recency bias, but also like just look at them and compare them. I mean, to me, Derrick Henry, it's hard to argue with that, but I don't know. Is it the doinkiness of this play and the fact that it's just this unknown dude who just happened to, like, no one knew last year in the last week in the facility? Does that make it better than, like, the Gary Anderson kick? I mean, that was a playoff win.
Yes, and Gary Anderson was approximately 70 years old with that kick, too.
Well, and it's also the fact that it hit the upright. If it goes right down the middle,
yes,
I don't think the slant, the Sam Sloman, easy for me to say, kick is winning this poll question. But the fact that it doinked in off the upright and the entire city of Nashville froze for like 30 seconds waiting for the ref to signal that it was good, I think contributes to the Sloman doink winning this poll question.
I don't know what y'all are worried about. Sloman said it was in the whole time. He knew it the whole time. It was going in.
Well, as you said earlier, there's visual evidence. There's video evidence suggesting that he did not think it went in.
Oh, man. What a kick. What a moment. You're right. Like, that did feel like time just stood still. Between the time it goes off the upright through the goal and the referees just looking at each other, hamming it up a little bit, and then throwing the hands up, that seemed like a long time.
You could have made a sandwich and gone to the bathroom in the moment, in those moments.
Let's go to our text line.
That was like the average time in the pocket for an opposing type of quarterback.
The time that Aaron Rodgers ran around for about 30 seconds last Sunday night.
Joe Rexroth with one last jab for the Titans defense after the game yesterday. Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris in Nashville texts in and says, what about the Ryan Suckup kick at Kansas City a few years ago? That's a heck of a kick. Now, the circumstances around it, not quite the same. I mean, two of these options are playoff games, and this one wins the division. So it's a little different from that aspect.
Yeah.
But the kick itself was pretty impressive.
It was pretty impressive.
It was amazing.
Yeah. And what was it, Joe,
amazing.
Like 15 degrees?
I mean, well, yeah, it was wind chill negative a million. I mean, just unbelievable. Like the walk from the car to the press box that day. And again, I'm from Michigan, man. Like I'm used to covering sports in Minnesota and Wisconsin, okay? And I was like, I can't even believe this crap. So the ball had to have been just a block of ice, and it was 50 plus. I did not think he had any chance of getting it there. And he got it over. I think that, you know, again, it's hard to beat, like you said, it's hard to beat these kicks that win divisions, win playoff games. I think if the Titans had followed that up by not losing at a bad Jacksonville team and then winning the division, which was in their control after that kick, then it's harder to keep that off the list.
Yeah, and like, you know, the memorable part of this is the key word, because I think these three stand out, but there is another one that stands out, and then somebody on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com just pointed it out. How about Rob Baronis kicking a 60-yarder to beat the Colts back in 2006?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
I was there for that. Number one, it was cold in that game too, but that is a memorable one of Baronis just nailing that kick. So, like, I don't think anybody's saying that Sloman's kick was the most impressive, certainly the most visually pleasing, but in terms of the moment, I'm probably still giving Sloman the edge there, even though Baronis' kick was pretty memorable.
And Nedney. I mean, don't forget the Nedney flop.
Oh, Pittsburgh fans are still salty about that.
They should be.
Yeah, it was bad. It was one of those things, is like if you're watching as a Titans fan, you just kind of look the other way. You're like, okay, all righty.
We'll take it.
We'll take that. I mean, look, you've had calls, goes against you. It all evens out. So as we look around the slate coming up on Wild Card Weekend in the NFL, where does Titans and Ravens fit in? Like, how excited do we think the rest of the league is for this matchup between the Titans and the Ravens? You've got Bills and Colts. You've got all sorts of interesting matchups, the Steelers and the Browns. Again, I mean, where do you think Titans and Ravens fits into the mix in terms of the must-watch matchups on Wild Card Weekend?
Well, the Titans did avoid what has been the AFC South, fate, which is the early Saturday game, right?
Yes.
So I mean, from that perspective, that I guess that's a good sign. I don't know. In terms of, I would think that this would be one of the really attractive games for the general fan, just because, I mean, you get to watch Derrick Henry, you get to watch Lamar Jackson, you get to watch, it looks like it could be a high scoring game. So just as a general fan, it should be attractive. I look at these, you got the great NFC West rivalry game there. I do think that the Browns Steelers gets the Sunday prime time for a reason. I mean, that's an appealing game to me because, frankly, I saw a bunch of Steelers Twitter yesterday talking about lose this game so you get these guys again. What are you doing? Lose it, I don't know if that's the way to go. I mean, that might be the game that, as a general NFL fan, might be the most attractive. Like, I'd love to think the Colts can hang with the Bills, and maybe they can. I mean, Jonathan Taylor is tearing it up.
Yeah.
Run the ball, keep the ball away from Josh Allen. Washington football team. I don't like the Washington football team's chances. I don't like the Bears' chances. I think the Titans Ravens probably right in the, I think it's one of the top three most attractive games. By the way, another thing, guys, I've hated adding. I look at two triple headers, and I'm not going to lie, it's kind of cool. But another thing with this addition of a team, the Steelers-Browns game, for example, the Steelers are playing their people yesterday if it's the old way, because there is a bye, and we can use the word bye, there is a bye up for grabs. If the Steelers win that game yesterday, or they're fighting with the Bills for the two. The two matters. So doing this now where we only have the one getting the bye, you are now cutting down on games that matter in the last week of the regular season, which stinks.
Also, in relation to the new playoff format, can you imagine the stress yesterday of the final minutes of that game if it was only six teams?
Yeah.
The Titans had their playoff spot clinched exactly. Because Miami lost. Can you imagine if it was just a six-team format and Sam Sloman not only was clinching the division but keeping you alive?
Then the poll question we just talked about would not even be close.
It'd be 100%.
I mean, it would be 80%. I mean, it's still no respect to Gary Anderson whatsoever because, I mean, that kick was amazing if you were there, if you were a Titans fan back in the time watching it. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's incredible. And, how about the Washington football team last night and Philadelphia just totally going in the tank? they took out Jalen Hurts, and the Giants fans were so mad. You're sitting there 6-10 whining about not getting in the playoffs, man. It was just it was a mess.
Giants players, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They were tweeting upset about the fact that Nate Sudfeld goes in.
Oh, it was certainly interesting. Yeah,
great point on the Titans, because then it's like absolutely. I mean, look, if they lose, then they're preparing for the Bills right now.
Yeah.
The team they beat, and, you move on to the next day. If it's the old way, it's utter misery or the celebration. And, yeah, the Eagles thing is interesting. Doug Peterson said during the week he was going to do that. He said that he would likely get Nate Sudfeld some work. I mean, again, the Steelers sent a whole bunch of people, so there should be the same outrage at them, right? And also, Hurts wasn't playing well last night. So I think it's a little bit overblown, but, I mean, Nate Sudfeld is Nate Sudfeld.
Anytime I can watch Nate Sudfeld play quarterback, I am all here for it. He was entertaining. Not in the great way.
Just football, baby.
Just a little bit of football. Eagles football. Prime and center. When we come back, it was also a big weekend in the college football playoff. Maybe an upset as well. We'll discuss it on the other side. Look ahead to the national championship matchup as well. That's coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. College football season is down to its final game, the national championship, as Alabama faces off against Ohio State. ESPN The Game Nashville has you covered as the college football finale will be on 102.5 The Game with the kickoff at 7 p.m. College football national championship coverage is brought to you by Boom Boss Pizza and Craft House, Coleman Tractor, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Electronic Express. So looking forward to that matchup between Alabama and Ohio State. And Joe, it was really interesting on Friday in the college football playoff. Alabama gets out early against Notre Dame. Offensively, they look great. Actually, Notre Dame did a better job than I thought they would in the second half of that game of keeping Alabama at bay. But Devontae Smith finishes with 7 catches, 130 yards, 3 touchdowns. Mac Jones, 25 of 30 through the air, 4 touchdowns. Another impressive showing from those two. And then Najee Harris, that hurdle that he had in that game was potentially the greatest hurdle I've ever seen in my life. Just to be able to jump over a full human being standing upright and to land in stride and continue to run for 30 yards after, that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
No, that's the best. That's the best I've seen because, you know, he was also sort of going laterally, kind of coming off a little contact and, you know, going laterally, and then he's got to quickly engage that guy. And so, first of all, to completely hurdle him there, it's not like he had 10 yards of running start to it, right? Then to take it as he did, I mean, I just wish he would have scored on the play. It would have been the play of the year. You know, I mean, that was incredible. They are a machine. Honestly, Notre Dame made it more interesting than I thought they would. And, of course, they score late, and we're all wrong on Pigskin Pick'em. Yeah. We'll get to Pigskin Pick'em later, by the way. Ooh, interesting developments going on in that.
It's not
world.
That interesting for me. Yeah, it's not going well.
But then the Buckeyes, man. I mean, hey, the Buckeyes are – they belonged in the playoff. It's good they were in the playoff. And I think a week from tonight, we might have ourselves a really good game. I could be wrong. Alabama's offense is just so good. But that team is loaded when they're playing their best. And Justin Fields was the story of that game. But also that D-line of Ohio State,
yeah,
they have got some dudes.
And there was nothing Clemson could do defensively in that game. 49-28 is the final. Ohio State was in control of that game really from start to finish. And Justin Fields, to your point, you know, we talked about the struggles that he had in the Big Ten title game against Northwestern, how maybe dealing with some injuries throughout the year. He looked great in that game. And, look, I mean, we've known this for a while. Justin Fields is a really good player, but he took it to another level in that matchup against Clemson in that game. And that was shocking to me the way that unfolded. Like, I didn't think that Clemson was just going to go out there and hammer them. I thought it would be close. But the way that they were just able to pull away and that to never really be a game at all in the second half was incredible.
Yeah, look, Fields is a talent, you know. And I thought early in the year, I was like, ooh, this guy, the chase for number one pick. There was a lot of talk about that after the game. I don't think it's a thing even after that. I think
no.
Trevor Lawrence is going to go number one to the Jags, and then you go from there. But I tell you what, like if I'm the Jets watching that game, I might be thinking about things a little bit differently. You know,
yeah.
if I was thinking about trading down, holding on to Darnold, you know, I might be like, ooh, this guy could be special. Again, it's only his second year of playing. You know, he's a true junior, second year of playing. He could be special. And again, watching that, and by the way, we can talk about Georgia too. That was a tough, tough loss for Cincinnati. Heck of an effort.
Sorry, Porth.
But also, if you're Georgia right now, yeah, sorry, Porth. How many times do you have to watch Justin Fields and just be like, oh, yeah. Jake freaking from, which apparently was Jim Chaney's choice, by the way. Like,
man.
Jim Chaney was the one who was pushing. So, I mean, if we want to blame Jim Chaney for everything in the world, there's another thing you throw on the plate.
Just continues to look great for Jim Chaney, regardless of where he's been. Did you see the photo of Dabo running out of the tunnel? And I guess, like, the Clemson flag was next to him, and the L got captured in the photo. So it's just Dabo running out of the tunnel and the L from Clemson right next to him. I immediately thought of you when I saw that photo. It was great.
And by the way, so Dabo. So I know some of our listeners think I hate Dabo and that, you know, I'm anti-Clemson and
you do.
Pro-Ohio State, whatever.
You am.
Listen, I will say this about Dabo. Yes, I absolutely went right to the ACC Network to enjoy his press conference after the loss. And you know I got my popcorn. He handled it really well. He really did. And, of course, the first question, too, is like, so do you regret ranking that team 11th? Yeah. I think it was my buddy Dennis Dodd from CBS. I think it was his voice asking Dabo about that. And Dabo, honestly, he handled it well. He handled it with class. This is, again, why when you say least likable, the least likable of the likable coaches. Wait, like Brian Kelly he's not in that category. And so Brian Kelly is crying after the game about basically like, what, do you guys expect us to win these games? Like, oh, the narrative. And this is like, yeah, dude,
right.
Like, we're asking you, what's it going to take to win a playoff game, to not get blown out in a playoff game? This is not allowed to be asked. I mean, what are we supposed to do? So, Brian, just tell us about still what a great season it was anyway, and what kind of moral victories you took out of this.
So smug.
I mean, what does he think? It's ridiculous. So, hey, on the likability meter, Dabo is way higher than Brian Kelly. Okay,
there you go.
Say that. And Nick Saban. By the way, we were talking about how Nick Saban's getting all nice and not as prickly. His little tantrum when he couldn't hear his headphones. There you go.
That was amazing.
It was the Nick-tator.
It was so awesome. These halftime interviews with Nick Saban, they're just the gift that keeps on giving. His inability to hear it on the headphones was awesome. Gosh, it was amazing. That was one of my, it wasn't as good as the Maria Taylor thing when, you know, I'm not going to, so quit asking, but it was pretty close. Yeah. Not watching him just totally fail with the technology and them not being ready to go. It was kind of like, in a way, a story of 2020, but man, it was funny.
So again, he is not on the likability scale. Neither of those guys.
Oh, he is. He's likable. Yes, he's likable.
Oh, come on.
He's like your fun grandpa at this point.
No. Saban is 1,000% likable.
Yeah, come on, Joe.
Saban is 1,000% likable. What am I? Where am I right now? What? No, he's not.
I'm a Tennessee fan. I like Nick Saban. I think he's funny.
That's bizarre. Well, okay. Look. Well, I'll give you that. I'll give you that his grumpiness can be entertaining. His little Coke bottle. Like, he has entertaining tantrums, and he's not as nasty and vicious as he used to be. But likable? No. No, he's not likable.
Do you think he's mad today that Sarkisian's leaving and going to Texas?
I don't know, but what is Texas doing? I don't know.
Look, I get it. He's been a really good coordinator. He is great at calling plays. It just seems like really kind of a jump-the-gun move with Texas, hiring Steve Sarkisian and bringing him in. Like, maybe it works out, and maybe he's learned some things from the last time he was head coach, and I'm sure being around Nick Saban and that program helps. But that was really weird to me that they went that route.
Well, I mean, it's like we talk about Tennessee, and it's like, listen, you can't keep starting over and over again, right? You can't do it. And that's the defense of Pruitt. That's the argument for keeping Pruitt, okay? It's the same thing at Texas, but the difference is, like, yeah, they haven't won as much as you want, but you, like, look, compare the two, you know? I mean, the recruiting, everything, like, Tom Herman has demonstrated much more, including as a head coach before Texas, to make you say, okay, let's give him another year for sure. And instead, you're going with this guy who has had issues, and it seems like a great success story that Sarkisian has overcome those. But, dude, he's the offense coordinator with the most ridiculous collection of skill talent we've seen maybe in college football. Do you think maybe that has something to do with his genius play calling? I think maybe it does.
I think there's certainly a good chance. Like, there's more to it than calling plays. Like, I don't know. It was weird timing, and it's just another one of those things for Alabama where that makes the run that they've been able to put together just that much more impressive, that they lose coordinators, like, every year. And they're able to continue to just roll right along in the college football playoff. Like, I expect they'll be back next year, regardless of who the offensive coordinator is. Like, it's just amazing what they've done. And their offense right now, I mean, I look ahead at this game against Ohio State. I agree, Joe. Like, I think it's got a chance to be a pretty good one because I think Alabama is vulnerable on defense. But I just don't know how anybody is going to stop Devontae Smith in that offense. Like, what's a successful point total? Like, 31. Notre Dame keeping them to 31, that's like as good as you can hope for in my book if you're Ohio State.
It really is. Trey Sermon? Woo.
Yeah.
Really wish Alabama would have added another 3 points.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Many people do. Many people do.
I was surprised. Now, again, it's Notre Dame, and that was a big talking point after the game too is, hey, can we stop putting them in these situations where they kind of fall through the cracks and end up in the college football playoff or a national championship game, big matchup, whatever the case may be, and they just get totally shelled. I don't think it matters who was going to be at number four this year. Alabama was going to tear them apart.
I agree. I will say that, no, it's too bad how it turned out for Cincinnati, and they really botched the clock late. But I hope people look at that and say, yeah, Cincinnati deserved more respect and consideration than they got. They really did.
Porth, are you over that yet? Did the Titans' elation yesterday erase the loss of Cincinnati for you?
Yes, we're running out of time in the show, so don't really want to. We don't have enough time
to
discuss
opening
that.
Old wounds.
Yeah,
sorry.
So I'll throw it back to you to close out the show, so we don't have to talk about that.
He immediately just got into a bad mood as we're leaving the show here. I accept full responsibility. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow to break down the Titans and the Ravens. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.